This episode is underwritten by Interactive Brokers. Take the bond challenge by using the free Interactive Brokers bond search tool, and you can search their deep availability of bonds and compare available yields against those of your broker. Learn more why Benzinga just named Interactive Brokers the best broker for bonds in 2021 at ibkr.com/bonds.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Tossing bowling balls in a pond. Inflation spike, yes. Transitory? Well, we're wondering about that. Selling pressure gains, but seeing some signs of capitulation. All this and much more on episode number 714 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Welcome to the correction. Selling May would have been a great idea so far. Well, let's see how deep the threshold is for some traders that seem, well, I guess they've been disgorged of a chunk of their profits on these high flyer names this week. And we're seeing a little bit of a turnaround towards the end of the week. That's good to know. If you haven't noticed and you're wondering what is going on with that guy's voice, let's just say that it was a little too much karaoke last night. Went to some friend's house, and all of a sudden, they pulled out four microphones, all color-coded for each person that was there. Maybe it was six microphones, I guess. And handed them out, put on the music, and yeah, you know what happens. Those of us with horrible voices seem to always sing the loudest, thereby giving us the worst case of a scratchy laryngitis-like impact the day after. So that's where we are. Now you may be asking, as I mentioned, well, what correction? Markets, are they correcting? I mean, we saw a good number of moves to the downside, but by the end of the week last week, wow, things really came together and charged higher. While, yes, markets themselves were down, where is this correction that you're talking about? We're going to get to that in a minute. First, let me tell you who I am, just to get us to know each other a little bit better. For those of you who are first-timers out there, I am Andrew Horowitz, founder and president of Horowitz & Company. Started back, back in the late 80s. And we've been helping people manage their investments, their money, ever since then. We do, work in the area of, stocks, let's say, and funds and ETFs, hedging, options. Whatever's the best and most appropriate thing for our clients, that's what we work with. So when we talk about the markets on this podcast, when we talk about investing, well, we're living and breathing it. IRL, baby. In real life, right? That's what we do. So a quick note, before we get into some of this discussion on how to send me some feedback questions, a lot of you want to know that. You can go simply over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and click on Ask Andrew, and that will give you the ability to send a comment or a review or a question right to me. And I know a lot of you appreciate that because I get a good amount of those on a weekly basis. Nothing to be nervous about. Anything that's on your mind, you can send on over. I look for them. I appreciate them. I really take them to heart. Understanding more about what it is that you are looking for, what you want to get out of this hour that we spend together each and every week. And thanks for all those who have sent things in over the last however long, but over the last few weeks especially. So let's get to this whole idea of this what is this market correction? What are you talking about here? It seems like, the NASDAQ came down a little bit. Small caps definitely down as well. Dow and S&P struggling to keep their all-time highs, but pretty close to them. But really what I'm talking about is this stealth correction that we're seeing underneath the surface. Parts of the market, not necessarily any one market index, because I know a lot of us spend time looking at, well, how did that index do and how does that compare to what I do? Or, you know, is the market in uptrend or downtrend, let's say, and we base it on a particular index or a set of indices. But yet, as we know, and we've talked about many times, the fact is that the indices are not necessarily representative of, let's say, stocks that are in your portfolio or maybe the ETFs that you have because of a couple of things. Number one, you may be investing in something totally different. But number two, the market indices, primarily the big ones that we look at, the small cap indices from the Russell or maybe even the S&P 500 or NASDAQ, are market cap weighted, meaning that the larger stocks in the portfolio in that index have a much greater overall representation when calculating what the index does. So therefore, if those are doing okay, but yet there's just a massive amount of selling and dropping of prices of the stocks underneath, well, we may not be getting a really good understanding of what is happening in totality within that index or within the markets. So I will tell you, if we look at things like the EV related, you know, that's the electric vehicle related, and some of the hot stocks in the ARK investments, Bitcoin last week and others in the area of crypto. Of course, we have SPACs. They have all been pretty much eviscerated. You know, even though they are up significantly from where maybe their IPOs, that $10 level they came out. Well, we saw some of these go to 40 and 50 and now down to the 20s or maybe even the high teens. So they all have a lot in common, many of these, because we saw this massive break higher. If you remember, if you look at any chart of any of these names, whether it was the solar, whether it was the cryptos, whether it was EV, whether it was kind of the new age types of stocks, right? The exciting next generation, the idea of saving the world and changing the way that we do business. So no longer are we going to sit with utilizing traditional financial products. We're going to go towards the FinTwit. Or fintech, fintwit for Twitter, fintech. We're going to go for DeFi. You know, we're going to look at things that really could significantly change the world in the future, change our lives, how we look at things. And what happened was that we saw this incredible move that really was unrelenting for some period of time, that all of a sudden there was a pop. And these massive breaks higher really were on total speculation that they would somehow continue with this magic, their ascent that didn't have any fundamental backing with them. It's kind of like the sheer force and will of investors that were able to move positions was all that was going on. If they moved up, well, it would be, well, keep on buying. The price was going up, and then it went parabolic. Then almost as quickly, once the momentum ran out of the vertical ascent and reached that terminal velocity, kind of like a plane, eventually stalled, and we started turning around the other side and saw that descent and terminal velocity hit on the downside. Everything came back to earth. And if you think of it like a like one of those Air and Sea shows, where we had one down here last week in Fort Lauderdale, actually. You know, the Blue Angels come and all these planes come. And if you think about one of these planes that goes straight up directly, I mean, straight up and eventually stalls out and starts moving backwards ever so slowly and turns, and then the pilot starts the engine again and maybe comes down straight for a long period of time And then all of a sudden turns it around as that engine is all heated up, ready to go. I mean, that's kind of where we are, right? That's the kind of look, if you think about how that chart would look, that's what we look like on many charts for some of these, for some of these stocks right now. And this is not a new pattern, but maybe it's new to investors that haven't seen this before. And maybe it's something that needs to be learned. So listen, let's be all upfront. Let's be honest with ourselves. And let's all agree on something. You're never going to buy on the bottom. You're never going to sell exactly at the top. Every once in a while, you're going to get lucky. You're going to hit that hole in one. But generally speaking, the idea is not necessarily to get the bottom, which would be great to do that, but necessarily not to get the top either. But what you want to do as a trader, talking about traders here, is to get the meaty part of the move. Now, this is completely different from investing. So I don't want to confuse you with that, right? Where you have the idea of, what is this guy talking about? You know, I'm investing for the next 5 years. What is this meaty part? Yeah, of course, if you stretch it out, it's a different discussion. If you're buying for fundamental reasons, you like the company, you like the management, you like what they're doing, you like the sector they're in, and you're saying, hey, you know, I'm going to hold this for a long period of time. This is really, at this point, at this moment that we're talking about, this right now is not necessarily for you. And why I also bring this up is that many people have gotten caught in the crossfire when it comes to how they are investing, whereas they have been investors for a long period of time, but they look all of a sudden over and they see all these unbelievable opportunities that have come, and they've changed their methodologies that have worked so well for so long into more of a trading, short-term minded investor. And all of a sudden, the realization is hitting that that's not working out so well. Now, that doesn't mean that you now become a long-term holder of a position that's working against you. Because the natural process a lot of people do is they buy something, and if it works against them, they kind of don't really sell. And from there, what happens is it turns into a long-term investment with the hope and the opportunity and the desire and the need and the viewpoint that, hey, you know what, I'm going to just hang on to this for a lot longer till I make my money. But that doesn't really mean that you were ever a trader. You were never really a scalp or a day trader or a swing trader. You were still an investor, but you got and waded into the waters of those that were, in fact, investing on a much different basis. So, again, this is more for traders and speculators, what I'm talking about right now. But the point is that when you are trading, you need to be satisfied with a particular level of gain, that meaty part we talked about a second ago, rather than taking it too far and eventually losing on the investment. And a lot of you are asking, hey, maybe it's time to get in on some of these fallen angels. I mean, look at the Chamath Palihapitiya portfolio, right? I think I said it right finally. Wow. Absolutely decimated. Recall, we've called him all along this whole time that he's been doing what he's been doing, the SPAC Barker. While a lot of other people named him like the SPAC King and the next Warren Buffett. I mean, how ridiculous was all of that when they were trying to unseat, and he was leading the charge on this, trying to unseat Warren Buffett's multi-decade profit and success and wisdom with just, I don't know, we'll call it many months of the opportunity of making a quick buck. Now, you know, one of the things that's really interesting, there was a few articles on it this week, talked about, hey, you know what? Heads I win, tails I win is his motto. But when you look at the people that invested in what he did, it's kind of like, heads, somebody's going to win, tails, probably I'm going to lose. There was a much different setup for those who invested. Now, I got to tell you, I personally invested in a SPAC deal of his before SPAC deals were really even popular. And that yielded a nice return. And then what happened is it kind of went parabolic with the rest of them and then started coming down. Fortunately, I took out of my profits. I got on a very low basis. What's interesting to note, though, is that really it was before the whole blow up and excitement. And when the top came off and the idea was really put out there that, hey, these SPACs are a thing of the future. Before the SEC got involved, that everybody was doing a SPAC. Once you saw that everybody seemingly was doing a SPAC, you know, maybe it's a little time too late to get involved. Maybe we're at a point that we should start taking some profits out. Now, he won this crown, this SPAC king, for a few months, and then just poof, gone. And while he made out like a bandit on many of his deals, that heads I win, tails you lose, or heads I win, tails I win, most, from what I could see from the prices, most people that followed him in post-IPO were probably down on their investments at this point. And that's a problem. Because I guess we'll call it a game that people are playing. They're following the Pied Pipers of investing. And I've seen this before. I've seen it before. You get all of a sudden a breakout individual who all of a sudden is like, wow, this is the next investment god. Let's put him on a pedestal. He's revered. Let's follow everything he says. Now, these days, with the advent of social media, I say these days, the last decade, but really over the last 5 years, those people that are put on those pedestals are now given a megaphone that's connected directly to your communication device. These are the Pied Pipers of investing, and they've often been people with some credentials that come out and historically they come out and they pump and talk their books like these chaps do. They do not need to if their investment stood as on their own. If you had a situation where an investment was a high-quality investment, we wouldn't have to see the daily barrage of information that comes out trying to convince. It's almost like he who protests too much. Coming out every single day of why Bitcoin is the only thing you should be investing in, or why one of these SPACs is like, hey, you know, look at this back of the napkin, one pager profit line that I did here. It's like, wait a minute, you're showing me a one pager on a deal that you're going to do that's going to be for $2 billion. And you're speculating on the bottom of this, the growth rate that you're going to push forward and that you are going to actually provide as a pro forma is going to be a 45% annual growth rate over the next 5 years on this without that ever happening in the past? How is that possible? But you do that because why? It fits the narrative. It fits the calculation. You reverse engineer it and say, okay, I got a $2.5 billion valuation. What do I got to do and put on paper to make it look like that over the next several years that this valuation is going to fit? And we see this done primarily with Chamath with these one pagers, but the other Pied Pipers, right? Mark Cuban and Elon Musk and Kathy Wood, all of the same ilk, some a little bit more intense than others, but having to garner the spotlight. And of course, the media giving it to many of them, but having to go out and actively find the spotlight. But let's talk about what it is that they do. And for a moment, I think probably the most relevant and most incredulous view of what is happening right now is the phenom, right? You know, the phenomena surrounding Elon Musk. I mean, listen, I'm not going to take anything away from this guy and the story and his cars and his spacecraft and SpaceX and vehicles and all of his incredible success before all this, by the way. Really, truly remarkable achievements. But the other side of Elon is a bit more, what would be the right word? Concerning for investors right now, whereas we've seen that he's gone on a tilt with this Dogecoin and his fascination and his focus and the recent Bitcoin bobble that he had. I mean, it seems pretty much a common thread for these Pied Pipers that they just don't like calm waters. You know, for a moment, think about a beautiful, peaceful morning in a small pond. You have the sun rising and you see the sun coming off of the water, glistening. And you look down in the water to see this perfect, flat, mirror-like reflection of the sky right within the calm waters. Now, if you brought Elon with you, he'd be looking at it too. But he would immediately take an object. I don't know. Somehow he brought a bowling ball with him and just throw it into the water to create havoc, to ruin the calm, to muddy up the waters, to create this waves. For what reason? Probably just because he likes the waves and the tumult. That's where he operates best, in an environment for him that is suited. And while the calm waters for him don't probably evoke a good amount of peaceful enjoyment, throwing that bowling ball in the water brings up so many more emotions and questions and excitement, I guess. He likes to operate in chaos. It's much better than calm. And he wants everyone around him to be part of that chaos. I mean, let's look at what happened last week on SNL. Where during the weekend update talked about Dogecoin and said something about, it's a hustle. Whether he meant to say that or not, Dogecoin dropped 30 or 40%. Then he did a U-turn on accepting Bitcoin this week to pay for Teslas, tweeting then that in a teasing fashion that Dogecoin could potentially substitute for Tesla payments on cars and lots and lots and lots in between. We're talking about a pretty big bowling ball tossed into the water. And why? It looks like just for the fun of it. Just because he can. And it's still unclear on how this all happens in a environment that supposedly he was supposed to be watching those tweets. The regulators kind of put the kibosh. But yet the regulators, who knows if they actually have regulatory authority over what he does with cryptocurrencies. And maybe that's why he's doing it. And that's just one guy. And he's a powerful guy, of course. But what about all of those other evangelicals of stocks and options and cryptos out there? It's pretty noisy and there's a lot of bowling balls being thrown in the water. And how could we forget, if you want to talk about that, what about this Fed parade that constantly is coming out, getting plenty to chew on this week, that they're sending up trial balloons about the potential for both tapering and keeping rates where they are and QE, and saying everything is right where it is, and some saying, well, there are signs of inflation, it's moving higher at a faster clip, however, blah, blah, blah. We are constantly getting inundated with all of this. And the question is, what do we do with all this information? There is a point on all this. Because what we're trying to get at is, how do you deal with this? It's like trying to take a sip of water out of a wide open fire hydrant. And that's troubling and difficult, especially for those of us that may be very much attached to the storylines and what's going on and the reasons and rationales behind what is happening with markets. So I'm going to tell you what to do. Before we do that, first, I want to talk about and say a big hello to Interactive Brokers, a great company, great platform, and a great sponsor of the show. And I want to ask all the pros that are listening right now. So financial advisors out there, are you looking to add or switch custodians? Have you thought about that, considered that? Maybe you're going independent. Well, Interactive Brokers provides the lowest cost trading and turnkey custody solutions for all size firms. You can trade globally from a single integrated master account. There's no ticket charges. There's no custody fees, no minimums, and no tech platform or reporting fees. Plus, IBKR has no advisory team or prop trading desk to compete with you or your clients. That's important. So I want you to consider switching to a really great platform. Switch your custody solutions that will work for you. Take a look about what they can do, all the different features that are available. Go over to IBKR/RIA. IBKR.com/RIA. I'll give one more hit there because I forgot the com. IBKR.com/RIA. So now what do we do? What do we do with all of the nonstop flow of information and recommendations and tips, and all these people are trying to help us for free? For free. Oh, what great people they are. Thank you so much. They're all trying to just help. What are we supposed to do on the other side of this? There's a difference between a podcast that's kind of going through the whole idea of investing and learning and education, and there's somebody else that's pushing a product slash an idea or something that they have a major stake in. Got to separate that. So what are we supposed to do with all these tweets and information, and then the information of on top of, you know, all the things that are coming through social media, through the TV, through the radio? Nothing. You got to think of it as just noise. Because, again, most of what is happening is that these people that are promoting this are simply talking or maybe even pushing their own book for their own benefit. You know why? Because they know what suckers we all are. Wow. There's a point. They know what suckers we all are for a really good story that we could chew on, bite into, and say, you know what? Maybe this is going to be the next way to my financial freedom. And they also know that there's limited, or maybe even no oversight at this point. No major ramifications if they step over that line. So what we need to do, I've talked about this about a year ago in a different manner, but we need to have this kind of filter on. That as we're reading, as we're listening, as we're watching, we have a filter. Kind of an invisible mental screen. That as we're listening, say, okay, you know, why is he talking this? What is in it for him? Now, a lot of these guys really do an incredible job of talking about how it's all about you. Okay, I don't think so. But we need to filter this out and stay on track. We need to, well, discipline ourselves to know what it is to be viewed as simply entertainment and for entertainment purposes and what's real. And the problem is that line is pretty close together and overlaps a lot of times. It's very it's almost impossible, not difficult, it's almost impossible to discern the difference sometimes. But if you have a goal, a time frame, and you know what your general risk parameters are, you should stick with it. Also, stick to what you do best. Let's maybe get something on the table right now. The idea that it's hard for anyone working full time to make sense of what goes on in the markets and with all these tweets and nonsense, but trying to do this in between sales calls or during smoke breaks or coffee breaks. Seriously? How are you doing that? How are you doing this 10 minutes when you get up in the morning, 10 minutes before you go to sleep at night? Are you really trying to trade on info and research 12 minutes a day? And then you wonder, hey, what went wrong? Hey, what? Wait a second. I read that article and seemed pretty good. I didn't look for any contra information. I didn't go right to the company's information. I just seemed very, reasonable. It seemed compelling. So I invested a little bit of this thing. And sometimes it works out. Look, I have a friend. He said to me, hey, what do you think about me investing in Hertz? I said, listen, I'm not going to give you advice on this. It's a bankrupt company, and usually what happens with bankrupt companies is that you get eventual judgment, and the common shares are wiped out. So if you want to invest in Hertz at a buck, have at it. So I can't recommend it because, truthfully, it's going through a bankruptcy. And when you go through a bankruptcy, what I've seen in the past, again, in a world where there were bankruptcies, in a world that something did fail because they weren't a good business enterprise, the common shareholders would be wiped out. Well, I'm going to invest a little money. What's the worst going to happen? I said, okay, you know, have a good time. You know, if you want to invest a couple $1,000 and let's see what happens. So let's say that he got 2,000 shares at a buck or so, whatever the number was at the time. Well, just last week, Hearst announced that there was a kind of a bailout by a firm. They're gonna, all the shareholders are going to get $8 a share. $8. $8. From a bankruptcy. Wow. So my friend made whatever he made. He made 14 grand net, right? On a couple thousand shares. Again, I wasn't giving him any advice on that because I said, you know, do what you want to do. He said, yeah, I was looking at this. A lot of people recommending this. Again, I don't know who was recommending bankrupt shares, but maybe we're in a different world where you go through the bankruptcy, you screw whoever you're going to screw on the deal on the bond side, but the common shareholders somehow maintain their value, which is unbelievable. But we need to discipline ourselves to know what is to be viewed again as entertainment and what is real. We need to stick with that goal, that time frame. We need to look at what you do best and think about, well, am I really equipped to make this decision? Because I want to also give you permission about something. I want to give you the permission, and I want you to give yourself permission to step away from all the noise. All the stuff that's coming through constantly, right in your face, and realize that investing is a long-term process. That doesn't mean you can't have short-term trading, you can't get a good winner that skyrockets out of nowhere because maybe somebody's being bought out and that happened very quickly for you, or there are other opportunities. But generally speaking, for the core of what you have, it's a long-term process. Even if you hear all these get-rich quick schemes and stories, you know, you don't hear all those drawdowns, the losses. I mean, when's the last time that you were with someone and they said, oh, hey, come here. I want to tell you about all my losses. Ugh, all these losses. No. Somehow they're like, hey, come here. I got to tell you. Man, I am making a killing on blah, 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 blah. I got more money that's being made. I mean, a five banger. I got this thing moving. Unbelievable. But usually what's happening is that person just slicing out their winners for your listening pleasure. I call this golf course talk. You know, that chest out, head held high discussions that, I invested in this stock that was recommended to me or that I found. And, you know, I went from, making 500% of my position. Like, really? Well, how many shares do you have? I don't know how many it was. It was a decent size, though. Really? Okay, what else? Any losses? Well, no, things are going pretty well. I don't look that often, but, I think things are pretty good. Oh, come on. Come on. If you want to play in that pond, you know, you could have at it. Just remember that there's always the chance that someone is going to throw a big ball, big bowling ball, a big, you know, weight, a rock every now and then and sink all they can so that most people can't swim inside of that. And that's what happens when we're listening to all this kind of junk that comes through all the time, the noise. So I want you to give you permission to block, to filter, to screen. It is unnecessary to waste any space inside of your head with all of this that goes on a regular basis. Now, if you say to me, hey, it's kind of fun, this banter. Okay, that's good. You want to have some kind of enjoyment from it and not take it seriously? That's great. But be careful when it comes into taking this stuff too seriously and saying, you know what, I'm going to invest in GameStop because it is going to change the face of the financial systems around the world, because GameStop is going to be that company that's going to take over. Think about what you just said. And let's kind of go through and continue this, because it's really a philosophical and a psychological discussion. The idea that we can have ideas that can gain steam under, I guess best described as an unknown force, or that could just continue for a period of time, and really focusing on the idea that we've seen these parabolic moves in markets. But I want to take this and switch this over to the same concept of the idea that you have movement that is like a train that picks up speed slowly but surely, but then continues on, or a big ship that starts out slowly, but then the inertia continues along for a very long period of time. And I want to switch that over to a discussion about the idea of the velocity of money, and specifically the topic of inflation. Because right now that is on everybody's mind. And we need to wonder if inflation is something that is just, at this point, a small annoyance, temporary, transitory, or if it's something a bit more. And all of us could slice and dice all of the numbers from the report from here to eternity, but does that make sense? I mean, we could pull out energy, we could pull out food, we could look at the main components of the recent rise. Amazing month over month and annual, not even annual, the year-to-date increase on used car prices that were part of that, that's saying, hey, that can't last forever. We can look at the other side too. But what is on the minds of people right now? I talk to a lot of people, just like you do, right? We all talk to a lot of people about different things a lot of the time. And what's interesting that I found is that most recently, the topic of inflation is coming up all too often. And it's coming up with people that I would have never thought that I'd have this conversation with, or who would bring up the topic or be involved in it and know so much about it. And most of them are doing the same thing. They're just complaining that just about everything that they are buying is costing more. Or at least that's the perception. And that's an important point right there. I want you to key into that. The perception that things are costing more. The perception that it's going to cost more in the future. Because perception can be extraordinarily powerful, especially when it turns into a core belief. And a lot of us are wondering why the Fed is so adamant about the fact that it's just temporary or transitory. One of the problems is that most of us see things in pretty much a linear manner, where we have the inability to see around corners, and we only have the capacity to see what's going on right in front of us or for a limited distance ahead of us. A little bit of peripheral vision, but that's about it. And what this means is that if we see prices moving higher for a small amount of time, we generally extrapolate. And this is where the problem comes in for the Fed and their claims of transitory, temporary, just something that we're going to see for a little while and is going to go all away. Because as prices are going higher, people are reacting to the fact that these prices are moving up. And what are they doing? What happens next? What is their natural response for any sane person? What do you do? Well, you think, well, prices are going up. And if prices are going up, well, I better buy some of that now because I don't want to be saddled with an incredible cost increase in the future. They want to get the products now before these prices go up, maybe even buy more to make sure they're getting a deal on something before the prices skyrocket. On top of that, we're seeing problems with the supply chain. Or maybe because of that, we're seeing some of the problem with the supply chain. We're seeing chips, we're seeing chlorine issues, Chick-fil-A sauces. You're only going to get one if you go to Chick-fil-A because they're having a major problem getting this their sauces manufactured, delivered, and through the chain. You got epoxy. What else we got? Resins, hardeners, cars in general. Again, the impulse may be that people and companies are stocking up right now. And that's sending a signal to the supply-demand curve that is also boosting prices. And here's where the problem lies with all this. The Fed is not even hinting that if inflation stays around the same level, that they're going to do something. They're sending out signals that they will let inflation cruise higher. They're saying, you know what, don't worry about it. It's transitory. We need to keep this going on. We need to make sure that we are sustaining the economic growth and reflation trade, especially because all these people are out of work. And somehow lower interest rates will happen to get people back to work. And the signal that this saying may not really do what they hoped, because it's actually possible that they may ignite a fire considering the perceptions and the beliefs of consumers right now. There's no risk. They're going to keep interest rates down. They're going to keep them down to 2023. If we're seeing that price is moving up already, well, therefore, they're going to probably move up higher. If they're going to move up higher, man, I'm going to pay a lot more in the future. I don't want to pay a lot more in the future. So what I'm going to do right now is I am going to buy and buy a lot of something, whether it's a house that I'm going to overbid on, whether it is a product, a low-end consumer product or a high-end product. I think that, you know what, I'm best suited to get that now. What does that do? What that does is it causes prices to move even higher because what you're doing is showing that there's a significant amount of demand out there and therefore the price can be passed on, move prices higher. And what do the higher prices do? Yes, that's correct. They keep that perception and that core belief very much anchored. So we're kind of worried about this to a bit, right? We're not hysterical at this point. And that is some, I think, the reaction that you saw earlier in the week with bonds moving higher were a recognition of what we're seeing right now. You know, we've been banging on the microphone about inflation and the potential for having inflation protection in your portfolio, in particular, looking closely at the bonds in your portfolio, right? We talked about how it's an important time to start looking at that months ago. What bond exposure do you have? What asset classes are in there that may be better aligned to an inflationary environment? Something I am telling you, it's really important for you to look at. Now, we've made changes in our client portfolios of the past, and we even did a little bit this week where we took a interest position. In other words, we're looking for interest rates to go a bit higher and took a short bond position in our trading portfolio. Question, though, is what have you done? And I talk about this a lot. I talk about if you're just listening for the entertainment purposes and not doing anything about it, just getting educated but not doing anything about it, you're wasting your time. You need to take a look at what you're doing. Doesn't mean you have to make changes, but at least spend a little bit of time looking at what your portfolio looks like. And that may be a little more difficult for some to do than others, and I get it. And you have to ask yourself, are you even able to look at your portfolio and understand what sectors, what positions are vulnerable to a higher inflation outlook? It's something I really want you to consider. Is this something that you can do? And if you can't, you should go out and find a financial advisor, someone who you trust, work with, someone who you have a belief that understands what is going on in the environment, aligned with what your needs are, your long-term goals are. Without getting to the all that, you need to find somebody you can trust and work with, but yet ask them specifically, hey, is my portfolio set up in a way that if we see inflation rise on a consistent basis over the next 2, 3, 4 years, or 2 years, whatever the period is, that I am set up in a way that is advantaged? Because if we see this perception really switch into a belief, the Fed's going to lose control of pricing and may be forced to do something, or the markets will just do it for them. And it's probably going to come in the form of higher rates. And while there is in the market right now a bit of a lead blanket on top of certain levels of rates, because what happens is that as we see rates go higher, it brings in others and said, wow, look at that. You know, our bonds in Japan are yielding zero or negative. We can get 1.75% from the U.S. Let's buy some. The sovereigns, the sovereign wealth funds, the hedge funds, a lot of arbitrage opportunities out there. But you are seeing that the opportunity to move higher, as we saw to a degree last week, is there. Inflation was pretty hot last week, both CPI and PPI. So there's a bit of a lead blanket right now, but what happens if inflation belief spreads worldwide? That means the level of that top range for rates will climb. What I mean by that is the equilibrium will adjust to a higher level. If they were saying, hey, we're going to come in at 1.75, well, if their bonds start moving up a little bit more too, they may say, hey, we're going to start stepping in at 2. And it may take a while. But I got to tell you, I think that right now it's better off to get a little bit ahead of higher rates right now. Because if you shorten up your maturity, shorten up your risk, get into some inflation-protected assets, how much is that really going to hurt changing from maybe a long-term oriented bond exposure within your portfolio? Also, some of the sectors and stocks, you know, are you really comfortable with the high flyers right now, the high PE multiples, in an environment that may in fact benefit the other side? Remember, psychology is a big driver here. Big driver for markets. And this is why we see the constant need to reinforce by the SPAC barkers, by the Fed, by the Pied Pipers of finance. I mean, we even see this with analyst ratings and those appearing on financial talk shows that are simply talking them books. But as a disciplined investor, we know that the data is also important to understand to make good decisions. So if we kind of sum up what we talked about today, it was number one, I think the primary part of what we should be doing from these SPAC barkers, Pied Pipers, and these legends inside their own heads of finance that are simply just step back, filter that noise a little bit. And secondly, if we think that we are going to see the potential for the idea of inflation moving towards a core belief, then getting away from the Fed's ability to really control all of this, that's going to be something that's really going to be very powerful and that you should really consider looking at within your portfolio. Kind of two major ideas that are somewhat related but yet different, so that you can get a much better handle on what's happening and control of your investments. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. I think we covered a lot of bases right there, a lot of track. So I want to thank you for joining me. And of course, if you need any help, you know where to find me. Ask questions. Have us look at your portfolio. Whatever you want, we're there for you. And also available on Tuesday evenings with John C. Dvorak. DH Unplugged is live at 9 o'clock at night. So you can go for the live stream and you can go for the chat room. So check that out as well. Thank you so much for joining me. I am going to see you, as always, next week. Have a great week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.